At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, November 29th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the new holiday-themed comedy Nutcrackers, and we'll present an interview with director David Gordon Green. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, I have not had a chance to see Nutcrackers by the time we're recording this episode. We're recording it a little bit early. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I hope everyone had a great holiday and is enjoying Vince Guaraldi Day, which is the fake holiday that my wife and I made up that is today as you're listening to this. Brad, I wonder if you can maybe just run down what this movie is, because it's on Hulu and I'm guessing a lot of folks, it may have sort of slipped past their radar. So tell me what this movie is.
Yes. So this is a new holiday comedy from David Gordon Green, who you might know from Pineapple Express. You may also know from the most recent Halloween trilogy. He's also worked with Danny McBride a number of times on television on the likes of The Righteous Gemstones and Eastbound and Down and whatnot. But he also has a streak of directing independent stuff like Prince Avalanche and George Washington, just to name, you know, a couple of things that you might know from his indie career, you know. So he's quite an eclectic filmmaker. And so this, after he spent years working on big horror movies like the Halloween trilogy and The Exorcist Believer, now he's getting back into what feels kind of like indie territory. And he brought Ben Stiller with him. I didn't realize this, but this is Ben Stiller's first lead role since 2017.
Wow.
Yeah, he hasn't really been doing much in the vein of like big acting since Brad's Status, which was in itself was a pretty low-key release at the time. So getting Ben Stiller to do, you know, a lead role like this is rather surprising. And the fact that it's, you know, a lower key Christmas comedy like this just coming out on Hulu is even more interesting. But I was delighted to find that this movie is wonderful. It's set in a small rural Ohio town, and it follows Ben Stiller, who is like working in like some kind of like real estate job in like a big city. And he's been called to this house of his sister to basically temporarily take care of her four kids, because unfortunately she and her husband have died, leaving them orphans. And so there's these four rambunctious kids. And I know that sounds like a pretty cheesy setup for a holiday movie, but in the hands of David Gordon Green, it's much more grounded than you would anticipate. It's much more authentic. And what really helps it is the fact that the four kids are played by four real brothers. And they are the kids of a friend of David Gordon Green's who he hadn't met since they were born. And while he was working, and he had a small role in Bones and All, Luca Guadagnino's movie. And while he was in Ohio shooting that, he went to go visit his friend, met her kids, and was just like taken aback by how much he loved them and how interesting they were. Because the movie itself, as it follows them being taken care of temporarily by Ben Stiller, you find out that they are a family who, like, they did ballet together. They also have like a bunch of farm animals in their house, and they kind of just like recklessly screw around on this like farmland and everything. And so these all four of these kids are basically playing themselves, because they are actually like ballet dancers, and like they live in this kind of chaotic house that has pigs wandering around inside the house and everything. So basically they're just putting Ben Stiller in the middle of this and him trying to navigate dealing with these four kids who are kind of all over the place. He's trying to find them, you know, a place to live, you know, whether it's like a new family or a home or something like that. And then of course he starts to like warm up to them. And, cause he's a little bit cold. He's like, he's not necessarily, all on board about this. He's just trying to get in and out as quickly as possible. But you know, they start to become more endearing to him. And they decide to, put on a, a Christmas like ballet show that's a version of the Nutcracker that one of the kids came up with himself. Like it's a weird like version that has like just different like story elements and stuff like that. And you see some of the drawings and like what he wants to do. But this movie is so funny. The kids are hilarious in it. They're non-actors too, so like they really are authentic, but like you just wouldn't know it because they all are so comfortable with each other. The way Ben works with them is really charming. So yeah, it's just I couldn't encourage you to watch this movie more with your family. It's perfect. It's not like a raunchy comedy that you might expect from David Gordon Green. It is a perfectly family-friendly comedy that it kind of falls in the vein of like the kind of family comedies that they used to make in like the 80s and 90s, where it has just a little bit of edginess, where like the kids are kind of saying inappropriate things and stuff like that, but it's not anywhere near like over the top or anything like that.
Like maybe like The Holdovers might be a decent comp to the kind of level of
I think The Holdovers is maybe a little more risque. This I would say this is more like and David Gordon Green actually mentions in the interview it's something like Uncle Buck.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, you mentioned it earlier. David Gordon Green has just one of the most unusual careers I can think of in modern Hollywood. He has these peaks and valleys, and not even in terms of quality, just in terms of like the genres that he plays in. Like you mentioned, the sort of back and forth between these acclaimed, almost indie dramas and then bigger stuff. Like there was that period right around Pineapple Express, that was 2008. And then he directed Your Highness and The Sitter in 2011. And those didn't really work as well for audiences. And he kind of retreated back to doing more stripped down dramas and then shifted over to stuff like Joe and Our Brand is Crisis and Stronger, the Jake Gyllenhaal Boston Marathon bombing movie. And then, yeah, the horror stuff. So like, where would you rank this in terms of his movies? Like, do you find that the indie drama stuff actually works better for you than his comedic work? Or and then this seems like an interesting mix of those two tones. So like, just on your personal sort of ranking scale of the stuff that you've seen of his, where would you put this?
Yeah, I mean, so I think I love his comedic stuff the most. You know, I loved Pineapple Express. I love Eastbound and Down. You know, everything he's done with Jody Hill and Danny McBride on HBO has been great. You know, Vice Principal, Righteous Gemstones, which is still going on. That's my favorite stuff. But I also love his indie stuff because he has a real flair for digging into like this Midwestern authenticity and digging into it with like characters that you start to care for. You know, All the Real Girls is probably one of his best. But yeah, he's always kind of changing things up. And he talks about this a little bit in the interview too, about how like trying to figure out like, cause obviously doing something like the Halloween trilogy and The Exorcist Believer was bigger than anything else he had done before. Even something like Pineapple Express. And he talks about like the driving force behind that really is like, he'll be happy to take on like a bigger franchise or a bigger title, as long as it's something that like gives him enough creative freedom where he doesn't have to answer to like 100 different people who all want something different. And when he was able to do Halloween, he had that freedom because they were able to break away from the mythology and just do what they wanted to do. And so I think he thrives in moments when like he's able to deliver something that is both his own personal style and something that like allows him the freedom to not have to like deliver something to that where somebody's expectations may not be the same as his.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I mentioned The Holdovers earlier, and I think that's a movie that's going to make it into my yearly rotation, or at least maybe like every other year or something. In terms of like new Hollywood entries, of course, there's like the classics, the staples that are always in there. But what do you think about Nutcrackers and its potential to enter your own personal holiday movie rotation? Do you think this is something you're going to be returning to a lot?
Yeah, I think it will, just because it is really funny and it's very sweet, and it's the kind of thing that you can like throw on where everybody is able to watch it and enjoy it. You know, the fact that it is family friendly but also very funny, because nowadays, especially since studios have kind of abandoned like big comedies, you don't get a big studio comedy unless it's like high concept with a lot of action and big stars, or a completely over the top, silly, zany family comedy where people are getting pies in their faces and like dogs are dragging them down the street and stupid shit like that. And this like hits this really great sweet spot of where the comedy is clever, the kids are charming and funny, it has heart to it. Ben Stiller, you know, does exactly what Ben Stiller does best, you know, brings this kind of dry wit and humor to it. And it just it's really heartwarming, you know, a Christmas comedy too. So like it kind of has everything you want, you know, that you want to feel around the holidays. And it's I was particularly surprised by how impressed I was with this movie.
So Ben Stiller has been directing a lot. He directed Escape at Dannemora. He's worked on season one of Severance. I think he's back for behind the camera for some of season two anyway, which is coming up pretty soon. What did you think about his performance returning to acting in a big way? Like you said, since 2017, I didn't realize that it had been that long, but was it like a welcome return for you? Was it like, oh man, I've missed this guy? What was your feeling watching his performance in this?
Yeah, honestly, that's exactly what it was, is because I hadn't realized it had been so long since he'd done a significant performance like this. But he really hasn't been doing a lot of acting. And so seeing him in a role like this reminded me, you know, why Ben Stiller is so good at what he does. And, you know, that when he's in the right project, you know, he's still funny. He's still got it. And it was great to see him in this. And I hope he starts to do, you know, more acting. Obviously, he's doing great stuff behind the camera as a producer and a director, which is great. But, you know, he's one of the comedy greats, you know, I think. And so I think largely he's probably stepped back because there just aren't that many opportunities to do comedies like this anymore. So, you know, hopefully the studios will come back around and we'll start to see maybe more comedies, you know, rise from the ashes. And yeah, because I would love to see Ben Stiller do more stuff like this.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's take a break and then we'll get back into your interview with David Gordon Green.
Now at Menards, save big on everything for your landscaping project. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Plus, get fast free estimates when you use our landscape design program, available in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on landscape blocks when you shop at Menards. Also, check out the great deals from our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, David, how's it going?
It's going good. How you doing?
Not too bad. So let's just start at the inception of this project. How did Nutcrackers end up in your hands?
Quick, long story short is I had a small role in this movie that Luca Guadagnino made called Bones and All. And it was shooting outside of Cincinnati near a farm that a friend of mine from college lived. And so I called her up and said, hey, I'm coming to town for this movie. I'd love to see you. Grab lunch. Come by the farm. And went by the farm and met her four sons. And then I just thought there's this perfect blend of charisma and crazy and confidence that these four brothers have. And they run a farm and they're ballet dancers. I think there's a movie here.
Yeah.
And so I went home and I was working on some horror movies at the time. And they were a little too provocative for my kids to see. So I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if I made a movie with those kids, made a, like a family movie, like I used to like, cause a lot of the family movies that come out these days are kind of condescending to kids and grownups, much less trying to serve both appetites. And so I brought in my friend Leland and said, hey, I got these kids. I want to make a movie that falls into that classic 80s model of like fish out of water. You know, is it a kid saving the farm movie? Like there's this movie Kidco I loved as a kid about these kids that start a manure business. Or there's this Kenny Rogers movie called Six Pack about a race car driver that adopts these orphans. I was like, here's all these influences or these like Uncle Bucks and things that Bad News Bears, these movies that I loved of like a dude having to deal with a bunch of crazy kids. And so I said, I've got the crazy kids. We just got to find the dude. So he wrote the script. And then when the writer-actor strike happened, it was like the perfect, everybody was scaling down everything that was happening, and it was a perfect time for a non-writer's guild writer, and we got the SAG waiver to support what we're doing in a industry that was struggling at the time to try to figure out how to make things. And so we went forward with the project, and Ben Stiller's show Severance had been shut down for the time, and so when I was reaching out to people I knew that I'd been wanting to work with and hadn't yet worked with, I called up Ben and sent him the script and sent him those same kind of references of 80s tropey movies. And, you know, I'd add movies like Overboard was another one that we reference a lot in our conversations. And so we got kind of excited about it. So he came out to the farm, met the kids, and we said, let's film it on their farm in their house with their animals and integrate who they are naturally into the characters that we're creating. And so then, yeah, we made it really short, fast, cheap, out of control type of movie. We filmed it on 35 millimeter, which was another way to kind of honor the nostalgia of the movie tropes that we were reaching to. And yeah, so it was just super fun. It's a movie that if you had a calculated industry that you're trying to strategize, it wouldn't work. But when you have an industry that's kind of in turmoil and upside down and everybody's looking at each other, we're like, what can we do and what should we do? I just wanted to have fun and make something that was a family-friendly Christmas movie.
When did you determine that it would be a Christmas movie? Was that early on, or did it kind of just come as you were kicking around ideas for how to turn it into a story?
The script in its original engineering was a summer movie.
Okay.
And then when it looked like it was going to be cold as hell when we're filming it, we said, well, let's just make it a Christmas movie then. So, by the time it all got put together with money and all that stuff, it was November of last year that we started rolling on it. And, or no, I guess December. It was right after Thanksgiving we started filming. Really bizarrely quick from conception to completion of a movie, from the fact that we weren't even filming a year ago and it's already coming out is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that too. It doesn't hit like that exaggerated over the top family comedy tone. Like it's grounded. It's just a little bit edgy where the kids are like a little bit inappropriate, but not, it's not, you're not going for a raunchy comedy. And I really miss those kind of movies.
Well, yeah, it was we were like one cuss word away from being an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to walk that line because the movies I always love as a kid or a kid movies that felt like I was one of them. And these kids who I've come to know really well, just trying to tap into what's raw and authentic about them and speak the way that they speak and try to make something that had enough of an indie spirit, but also hit commercial buttons. Like I wanted to make a movie with a happy ending. I've never done that. I don't know how many movies I've made, but none of them have ever had a happy ending. So, all these things that I'm always trying to reinvent myself and challenge myself. Could I make something that was uplifting and had a fun spirit, but also had enough of texture of me and the kind of eccentric qualities and ways I like to look at both childhood and 80s movies.
Yeah. Was it difficult to convince Ben to come on board? Because it's been a while since he's had a lead role like this. I think 2017 was like his last lead role, so.
Well, that was what the brilliance of the very first conversation we had is I sent him the script and then we talked about it and the first thing he just started laughing and said the craziest thing is I think I might actually do this. So I think it was something that took him by surprise and off guard and for him coming off of the extreme engineering of his brilliant series work, which he's working on and works very hard and gives all of himself to that, which like, hey, just be l let loose. And this is something that you can't engineer because the chicken's not going to hit its marks and the pigs don't give a fuck where you tell them to stand. And these kids have never acted before. So you have to surrender to the elements. And
Yeah.
it's the opposite of what he and I had been doing. Even for me coming off of horror movies where if the lighting is not just right, Michael Myers looks goofy, or if the special effects don't line up with what you've shot, then the difficulty there with trying to elevate a genre movie. But here it really was, we didn't have a dolly. We had a tripod and a 35 millimeter camera and we just filmed things. So it
That's great.
was
Yeah, and
great.
now it made me realize how much we've been missing kind of Ben Stiller's brand of comedy, because he has that perfect way of like being serious and deadpan, but also still being extremely funny.
Well, that's why he's the perfect guy for this job because in a lot of ways this movie leans dramatic, right? And if you just have a goofball, it just turns into a silly fart joke comedy. But trying to have somebody that brings some gravity to it, which he does, emotion to it, which he does, and he's just got an amazing range of acting chops, which I've always just loved. I even love like Permanent Midnight and some of the more off-brand stuff he's done alongside the classics that he's made. So I think it's cool to be able to. For me, it was amazing to get in the ring with one of my idols, comedic. I mean, from the Ben Stiller show, and I mean, there's so many things about his career and the way that he's taken very offbeat, if not eclectic, if not outrageous types of comedic sensibilities, and made it something that I felt like he was speaking to me and my friends, and then he makes something that's accessible that everybody loves too. So I think that's a cool thing that he has. There's a very small niche of actors that can do all of that.
You mentioned that the kids hadn't acted before. So how difficult was that getting them acclimated to like making a movie like this? Was there a lot of room for improvisation and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's just it's improvisation all the time because they're alive and loose and they bring their elements. If they're tired, you see it in the movie. If they ate too much candy, you see it in the movie. And so you have to allow that because they don't have trained, they don't have the kind of actor training that would engineer a more disciplined performance. And so what the movie has the opportunity of the authenticity of childhood, of letting these kids talk like they would talk. And sometimes in the edit room, you would hear me off camera, like throwing a line to him to like, hey, play with this, or what if you said that when he says this? So it really was a very active type of filming, but they couldn't really do the same thing twice, you know? So you have to be ready. And we only had one camera, so you had to be ready to try to catch it and use it. And then when you have a pro like Ben that knows how to take what they've given and put his spin on it so that it actually makes sense when you get his coverage, it's pretty classic. Yeah.
When it came to doing their version of the Nutcracker, did you have them offer like their ideas as far as what they would do if they were remaking the Nutcracker?
That was the idea. I mean, it was kind of their idea in the first place because they were doing the Nutcracker when we were filming this, but they were doing a legit version of it. And so I asked their ballet teacher to choreograph a few things, and I was going to let the kids then bring some of the attitude, costume design, and ideas to the table that would make it feel like it was more them. Because they're little rascals, they're little boys that run around in the mud all day, and they're not necessarily as elegant and graceful as your average prima ballerina. So we wanted to make sure that there was enough of that character that felt like it was their signature on top of something that was an accessible story.
One of my favorite scenes is where Ben uses Rambo as a bedtime story. It's so funny. Were there any other variations where he used other questionable movies as the bedtime story, or was it always Rambo?
That's it. Well, it was always Rambo, but sometimes it was very violent, and we that was another one of those scenes of like, how do you find enough where it's appropriate for a kid's bedtime story? It was walking the line of appropriate of like on that movie, and that's subjective, obviously, for everybody. But I feel like it's just naughty enough for a kid to feel like they're getting away with something by watching it, and it feels for a parent, they might put earmuffs on the kids a couple of times, but it's gonna be something they'll enjoy watching with their alongside their kids and their family.
So the production design for the house is great. Did you have to do a lot to like make up the house to make it more chaotic, or is that the natural state of things there?
To be honest, we took things away so that we could have places to put the camera. But that it's very. I was there yesterday, actually. Yeah, we did a fun screening in the theater where we shot the film. We did a
Oh, that's
screening for
great.
the town. So we went there yesterday. So I was at the farm, and yeah, it's that's why we're there. We wanted to capture what felt real, and it was just moving things around to give us a little elbow room so that we could put a few lights and cameras in the way, but that's home sweet home.
How careful did you have to be with that Porsche in such a muddy, dirty area?
Yeah, that was probably the most valuable, expensive thing that we had to deal with on the movie, which is funny. But yeah, it was like when you have a few sacred items like that. But those kids really wanted to drive it, and so we let Homer was the oldest kid. He really was driving it. That was not like a that was no stunt. That was no trailer. That was a 13-year-old or 12 at the time driving a Porsche.
That's amazing.
But when you meet him, he's driving four-wheelers and motorcycles on the farm. So it's not like your average kid that doesn't know what he's doing. Like the kid, you just give him a few of the few pointers as to how that vehicle works, and he's ready to rage with it.
That's great. I wanted to say you perfectly capture the vibe of, the small Midwestern towns, and obviously it's because you actually shot there. And as someone who lives in Northwest Indiana,
Oh,
like
nice.
there's a town like exactly like this, like every 20 or 30 miles. So like this easily could have like been in my backyard. What is it about the Midwest that is so appealing to you as a filmmaker? Because this is not the first time you've set a movie in this kind of area.
No, I love it. I love rural. I love the communities. I love the hospitality. As a filmmaker, you go into a place and they either want you to get out of the yard, or they want to bring you cookies and invite you inside to to make you feel welcome. And so I love going to places like this. And you know, the mother of these four boys was a close friend of mine in college, and come from a family of both farmers and artists. And so to me, it was finding that, and it always is, very often in the rural communities, it's finding that balance of people that appreciate storytelling and expression and emotion and movies, and love the fact that we're there with movie stars and inviting local talent, people that had never been in front of a camera. You know, these are part of the stories that I think become really compelling in communities like this. And I just like to go where most people aren't. And you know, if someone says, "Hey, yeah, we had a film production here last week," it's a lot less interesting to me than finding some of these untapped stories in these communities and landscapes that I feel are a little bit neglected in American movie making.
We had a similar experience here actually, where 35 years ago, Prancer was partially shot here in
Classic, holiday classic.
Yeah, and now the director, John Hancock, and Sam Elliott, and the young girl, they're coming back for like a Q&A anniversary screening and everything. So yeah, and this really kind of actually feels like it has the same feel of like a Prancer, almost like a Sundance Christmas movie.
I love that. Yeah, because I remember when that came out too, and it was one of those movies that built and built and grew, and then season after season, even it was but its original theatrical release kind of snuck up on people, and it was a bit of a sleeper.
Yeah, for sure.
And now it's become a classic that my kids love watching. So it's cool
Yeah.
that that movie can have that life in a community, and the pride that a community can take in something.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like Nutcrackers has like that kind of potential too, where like people will find it during the holidays, you know, on Hulu, and it'll become like regular viewing. It just feels like it could easily join the roster of Christmas movies.
That's the hope. And you know, it is also the kind of movie where there's so much going on in the background that, like some of these movies that are seasonal, that you know, you might say, "Oh, I've already seen it," but you watch it again and you see other things in the background, or some weird little booger picker in the background that's doing something you didn't notice the first time, and it becomes a little bit of a Where's Waldo treasure hunt of comedic things that are happening. So I've really, for someone that spends a lot of time in the editing room, even watching the movie again this weekend in a theater with an audience, you kind of notice new things, and that's pretty amazing for a film like this to have some longevity, hopefully, in its own story.
Like you mentioned earlier, you spent a lot of time on horror movies and big horror movies too. Do you f see yourself venturing back into franchise or blockbuster territory again, or do you feel like maybe it's time to like get back to doing more smaller scale comedies like this for a while? I'm sure Righteous Gemstones kind of scratches that itch, you know, a little bit, but I wonder if this is something you're it kind of wanting to get back into more.
Totally. Gemstone scratches the itch of being able to play with all the toys. And I love to be able to have the right time and money and tools for the story. I think that's really important. But for me, the most important thing is always creative freedom. And so whatever it is, I like to find that line of budget where nobody's messing with you. And we did have that on Halloween movies, like where it's just they're economical, they're fun, and whether it's a franchise or not, nobody was saying don't do this, right? So it was a group of me and my collaborators, the exact same crew as Nutcrackers was making these movies. And a lot of these are my colleagues from film school, fellow students that I went to film school with, and we've been working together for 30 years now. So and those movies were a really wonderful experience in, hey, here's this big franchise with a lot of commercial potential, but you get to do your own thing as long as you keep the price tag low. I love that. So I think the lesson is keep the price tag low, keep the creative freedom, and then it's up to you in the creative process of how eccentric do I make it, and where sometimes the eccentric qualities I have to offer end up like Pineapple Express and become people, it catches fire and people want to see it. Other times it becomes a movie like Your Highness where people don't quite get it, or they don't have the same sense of humor about the story I'm telling, and then it's different, you know. But those are great examples of movies where budget was low on one and too big for me to be let loose on another one. And so, you know, I'm always trying to strategize a little bit of like, how do I find a version where the economic scenario maximizes the creative potential?
Have you found that it's been difficult to try and get like the comedies that might have been like home runs like maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago and get them a studio to support them these days? Because it feels like the studio system has largely abandoned, you know, bigger comedies like Pineapple Express or Your Highness.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of I think they should learn a lesson from what Jason Blum did so brilliantly with horror movies, is understand that you don't need $60 million to make a comedy. You need funny people in front of a camera. You don't need a movie star to make a comedy. You need a funny person in front of the camera. These aren't necessarily expensive things. Or like what Jason would tell you is like, put your money where your mouth is. Make it low budget, work on the back end. If it wins, if it's a success, participate. If it tanks, the less money it costs, the less people that are pissed off at you. So I like that type of concept, and I think we're ready for a renaissance in comedy. And that's why something like Nutcrackers is a fun experiment, because you make it down and dirty with your friends and the people that you trust, and you know your relationships can get you there very economically. And and nobody's looking at you weird when there's an opening weekend that was disappointing to them. They're like, this movie's a win-win, and
Right.
that's a really fun thing to be a part of, that type of spirit of filmmaking.
Yeah. Do you think that you might want shift into a genre you haven't done before at some point, like maybe going the sci-fi route, or even after this Nutcracker experience, like could you ever see yourself doing like a full-on musical?
You better believe it. I would love a full-on musical. I'm looking into several documentaries, subject matters that I'm really interested in, and I think that's fun to think about, like how intimidating it is to tell a story from a documentary's perspective, stylistically and technically. Musical's something that I would love to see what I would do with it, because I know I don't really have the patience for some of the meticulous nuance of the technical attributes that make a brilliant musical. So what would my version do? Last week I watched Hello Dolly and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, right? And I was watching them thinking like, yeah, what would I do? Because I don't necessarily have the temperament or patience to do the expertise. With Hello Dolly is just spectacular if you haven't seen it in a while, but like it blows your mind with how nuanced it is. And so what would my version of it be? Would it be more like the movie Once, which has a very musical spirit to it, but feels like it comes from a more of a personal perspective? Or what would it be? So I'm really curious. But curious is always the thing that gets me in trouble, because then I start thinking, well, maybe I could I have that devilish spirit about the access to places and genre and actors and all these things. So yeah, I wouldn't put it past me.
And then just to wrap up here, what are three Christmas movies that you play every year at your house?
Easy. Elf, Die Hard, and A Christmas Story are the like those are the classics that I know backwards and forwards, and so that's where I go. And I'll squeeze in a Home Alone and a Home Alone 2. I like those too.
Yeah, heck yeah. Right on. Well, yeah, that's my time. David, thanks for taking the time to talk to me. I love Nutcrackers, and I can't wait to see what else you got in store.
Right on. Good talking to you, Bradford.
Take it easy.
All right. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed that as much as I did. You can find more about this movie at slashfilm.com. I will try to link to a couple things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.